1000-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Good morning, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Sunday, the 10th of June, Anno Domini 2007. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kirchgesner.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, all the important things that people tune in to this show for. But we're going to start with Microsoft and some fake security alerts. Microsoft's monthly visitor is coming out on Tuesday, and scammers are sending out fake security bulletins that attempt to install malicious software on a victim's computer. The email messages claim to describe a cumulative security update for Internet Explorer that fixes a critical security flaw in the browser. It comes with a link entitled "Download This Update." When users click on this link, they are taken to a server that attempts to install malicious software known as TrojanDownloader.win32.agent.avk. This Trojan software then attempts to reach out to other computers on the internet in order to install more programs on the victim's computer. The SANS Internet Storm Center received its first and only report of the scam on Thursday night, but a second sample has also been posted to the Chinese Internet Security Response Team blog. SANS volunteer Lanny Seltzer believes that the criminals behind this scam may be gearing up for more activity. The Trojan looks for three different servers, and two of them have domains that haven't even been registered yet. He suspects the authors of the scam may be planning to register those domains before embarking on a more widespread campaign. The two email samples contain obvious errors that would be caught by technically savvy users, but most of the people who see them wouldn't get it. Microsoft, here's the important part to note. Microsoft does not send out notification email when it publishes security bulletin. Or excuse me, they do send out notification when they publish security bulletins, but the links in those alerts take users to the bulletin themselves, not to executable downloads. So anytime you get an email from Microsoft, check the link. If it takes you to a Microsoft website, you're good. If it takes you anywhere else or tries to download something, it's a fake.
And be sure that it's Microsoft.com, you know, not something like Microsoft.blog.ru. Just because I have Microsoft in the name, still pay attention. It's got to be Microsoft.com.
Right, and that's got to be among the first things you see. All right. Our first caller is Bob from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Good morning. Out on your soundbites.org website, we have the archive shows. Is there a way to pick one of those shows, burn it to a CD so I can play it in one of my MP3 players?
Yes, absolutely.
But you can skip the CD step if you're just putting it on an MP3 player.
Right. What any one of those shows, if you go to the list of to the archive list, mm-hmm. you will see all the shows listed. You can download any individual show
by clicking on it.
It comes to you as an MP3. If you have to, right-click on it and select Save Link As.
Okay, this one will be Save Target As, okay, because I'm under Vista.
Yeah, same thing, Save Target As. And then and then what you end up with is your file on your hard drive as an MP3.
Now, normally when you just click on it, it will play in your browser.
Right. But if you want, right, if you just click on it, it plays. If you want to, you can download it and then do whatever you like with it. That's the whole point of these archives.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you.
And if you use a podcasting client like Podcatcher or iTunes or Podder or any of the other ones, you can subscribe to the feed, and every time we post a new show, it will automatically download to your computer.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Sure.
Appreciate it.
There you go.
That's the link above that. Hey, podcasters, here's your feed. You paste that into whatever podcasting client you're using, and that'll work fine.
Right.
Should we tell
them? Yeah.
Well, actually,
it
doesn't matter. The camera's working, but the link on Wham's webpage is off because it says the camera stops at 11.
Yeah.
So,
but
he had the link. He had the link cached. So if you go to Wham's, what we're talking about is the webcams in the studios are now working. However, the link on Wham's webpage is not available at the moment. Yeah. So if you know what the link is, you can look at the cameras. If you don't know what the link is, you can't.
Right.
You should be able to show the address bar there, Dave, and find out what the actual link is.
Yeah, and we can post that. What's really odd about this is it's a few seconds behind.
Especially, it's behind the audio, too.
Right, but it's very oddly behind, and so I just watched myself take a drink of coffee. It's very weird. But we'll see if we can during the commercial, we'll grab the URL and stick it up there so those of you who did not cash it ahead of time can get to it. Our next caller is Linda from Greece. Welcome, Linda. What's your question?
Dave, this is for you. I picked up my computer last Tuesday, and since I was so busy, I set it up yesterday, you know, plugging everything in.
Mm-hmm.
Now my wireless keyboard, my mouse doesn't work. I've got a corded mouse. I just plug into the USB port, but I can't get it to work. And what am I doing wrong?
Have you,
is it turned off?
Yeah, the computer was turned off. I plugged everything in like I was supposed to.
No, does the mouse have an on-off switch? Wireless mice have on-off switches to preserve the battery.
And sometimes you also have to hit the connect buttons underneath the keyboard and on the receiver.
I did that, and it still doesn't work. But I have a strictly corded USB mouse, and that doesn't even work. What am I doing wrong?
You sure you got it? Well, the corded mouse, or the corded, the keyboard with the cord on it, do you have it in the right ports?
Okay. No, it's a wireless keyboard.
Yeah, but
she said you had a USB mouse.
It's a USB mouse.
Oh, USB. Well, again, those sometimes take one time to start it up, find it, and then you got to reboot for it to really find it because it's got to load the drivers because of the wireless mouse.
Sometimes if you plug that into a different USB port, it works.
Yeah,
I've noticed that a lot. You plug something into one USB port, it works fine. You plug it into the other USB port, it won't work.
It doesn't work at all.
You
yeah.
have to plug it into the original port you originally set it up on.
Put it try replugging it in and let it do a fine. You might have to shut it down because it's got to find the devices, then usually do a restart, and then they'll usually click in and get working.
I've done that, and I'm thinking to myself, well, first of all, when I turned my computer on, maybe this is it. It's been 4 days. I didn't have time to do it. I turned my computer on, and I got a screen that said BIOS settings. And I thought to myself, I don't know what that is. So I hit escape. It says, do you want to exit? I said, yes.
Internal battery, so BIOS reset to zero?
I don't
know. Is the time
okay on it?
Yeah, time's fine on it. But I thought to myself, what the heck's going on?
Well, if it's still giving you an issue, stop by on Monday with the wireless keyboard mouse. We'll test it out gladly for you.
Yeah, okay.
Because, like I said, we didn't do anything different. We don't use wireless keyboards and mice. We usually use the standard PS2 or USB keyboards and mice.
Okay, well, that's another question I want to ask you. If I go out and I buy a wired keyboard, that should work, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm gonna go out this afternoon and buy one and try that.
Or
out.
You might. Another thing you might want to try too is make sure that the batteries are okay in it. Change the batteries in the keyboard and mouse.
Oh, well, the wired mouse doesn't come with batteries. It was a 50.
Right, but no, you said you had wireless keyboard
and
mouse.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah,
okay.
Change the batteries in those.
Okay, thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
All right.
That's the one thing I don't like about the wireless peripherals, but I'm using one now.
Yeah,
you have to change the batteries all the time. In fact, my mouse doesn't have an off button on it, so I have to take the battery out
right.
to preserve it.
Right.
Yeah. You know, Logitech just got into finally putting the button on it for a while. Yeah, that's all you could do.
Well, they go to sleep when you're not using them, but with most people in laptops, it's in your bag bouncing around. It thinks it's on.
Yep. You're right. Our next caller, Colin from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Colin. What's your question?
I have a problem with my sound. It plays sounds in the media player fine, but when I try to play sounds off the internet or Windows sounds, it won't play.
It's probably a setting in the sound control panel for the sound devices.
It seems like it happened after I downloaded the newest version of Firefox, and I can't find out how to change it.
So if you run your media player, which is the Windows media player?
Yes.
That works fine.
That works fine.
But sounds off the... I wonder if he's lost his codecs.
Could be.
I mean, the media
player...
Well, the
Windows generic sound should play.
Yeah, can you go into control panel and under sounds and settings, hear any tunes come out of, From an anger.
No, it won't come out of there either.
Do you have speakers plugged in to the external speakers in addition to the internal speaker?
Yes, I have external speakers.
I've seen sometimes where one media device is sending to one speaker port and another media device sends to another speaker port. So make sure you're in your sound control panel. It's all pointing to the same speaker port. That's weird, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, offhand, I'm afraid I don't know. This is clearly one of those questions where you got to be sitting in front of it, and once you are, it'll make perfect sense to you. It'll be easy to fix. The only thing I can honestly think of is that under media player, it's playing WMA files, and a lot of the Windows things are waves, and a lot of the internet things are MP3s, and I'm wondering if he's lost his codecs.
Could in the control panel under system, you go in the device manager. You're not getting any yellow cautions or X's under the sound devices?
No, I'm not.
That's actually something for Linda, the previous caller, to check too. Your system, maybe the computer forgot it had a USB port somehow.
How do I download new codecs?
You don't. They come with the media player.
Yeah.
So you have to re-download the media player. But his media player is working. It's the Windows sounds that aren't working.
Well, yeah, but the media player almost always plays WMAs, right?
I think so, yeah.
But that's the only thing I can think of. Listen, Colin, I'm sorry, but this is one of those things you're just going to have to take to somebody. I hate to say that, but it really is...
You know, without seeing what those settings are and what the choices are, it's hard to say.
Oh, okay. So
yeah,
I guess
I'm sorry.
I just have to either take this in or reload it.
Yeah,
right.
That's
one way.
You can always try uninstall, reinstalling, and I mean,
well, if it happened after Firefox was installed, try uninstalling Firefox and see what happens. I'm searching for an issue between Firefox and sound, and it doesn't seem to be related to Firefox. It's usually a plug-in. Inside of Firefox, you're not getting any sound because you need to load the new Flash plug-in or the new QuickTime plug-in or something like that.
Okay. Thank you.
Sorry.
No problem.
All right.
We hate those weird ones.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 20 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Sound Bites. Well, there's a spyware bill, an anti-spyware bill, of course, that got passed by the U.S. House of Representatives this week, but it faces opposition from several groups, with one side saying it's too strong and the other side saying it's too weak. The Security Protect Yourself Against Cyber Terror Trespass Act, Spy Act, the Spy Act, which passed the House Wednesday by a vote of 368-48, would prohibit taking control of computers to send unsolicited material to others, diverting the web browser, modifying a computer's settings, and keystroke logging. The bill would make it illegal to collect personal information without permission, and it allows fines of up to $3 million for some violations. But several business groups, led by the Direct Marketing Association, sent a letter to House leaders this week raising objections that the bill too broadly defines computer software and information collection programs, and it could make it illegal for e-commerce sites to recommend products based on browsing or buying history, engage in targeted advertising, or to place cookies on a website user's computer. The scope and impact of the bill on legitimate businesses goes far beyond regulating spyware and cuts to the heart of the information economy, said the letter signed by 31 trade groups and companies. The bill could limit the seamless internet experience that is responsible for the widespread adoption of the internet by consumers. Representative the Spy Act's two main sponsors, Representative Ed Towns, a New York Democrat, and Representative Mary Bono, a California Republican, weren't immediately available for comment. This is an interesting problem. I don't know if you guys do this at all, but I certainly have, for Ask Nick, I certainly have cookies that get set to let you know, to let the system know where you left off in viewing the bulletin board system and stuff like that, and so that you don't have to log into every screen over and over again.
Yeah.
But, it really does seem like the possibility is that I would be violating the law if I tracked you just enough to determine where you last viewed the bulletin board system as a service to you.
See, that's been the whole point with almost every new technology. It's great for a while until the bad guys figure out how to use it.
Yeah, some way to
trick and then, it's, yeah, then the lawyers try to legislate intent. it, and it's impossible. You know, it's difficult to break out the legal uses and illegal uses.
Right.
Something was set up with good intentions, and they turn around.
Right. Listen, we're going to take a quick break. We have the mighty Glenn Lambert's in for giving you news and weather and sports and all of those things that you really listen to Wham for. So we'll be back on the other side of that with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Pat Kay, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 27 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 32 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. Parallels Desktop, and it has for 3.0 has been released for the Macintosh. In addition to 3D graphics support, the Snapshot security tool, and improved integration between Windows and Mac OS X, the new version has more than 50 productivity and security features. Among the new features in version 3.0 is Smart Select, a tool that lets you open any file from Windows or Mac OS X using an application from either operating system. For example, Smart Select is automatically configured to mount and open Mac.dmg installer files in OS X, even if they were downloaded in Windows via Internet Explorer or Outlook, and to automatically open .exe files in Windows, even if they reside in Mac OS X. Another big feature in the release is 3D support for OpenGL and DirectX graphics software, which enables users to run Windows games from inside Parallels without having to reboot.
Which is a real key thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the huge thing.
Although it's still going to be slower than rebooting into Windows only because you're running two operating systems on one computer at the same time.
Right, right, right. There's a bunch of other things for virtual machines, like making them read-only to protect them and stuff like that. So it's pretty neat. It also includes a 6-month trial of virus and spyware protection. Although those of you running Parallels should probably dance the security tango and install all of that stuff on your Windows side now. Because now you've opened yourself up to all that.
Yeah, that's what has been one of the benefits of Parallels is it is isolated between the Mac and the Windows. So if anything happens to Windows, it just happens to Windows.
Right. But you'd rather not have it happen to anything. And as I keep saying, it's better to be a good net citizen than than
just
anything
check
else.
Check all the way around just so you don't pass it on.
Right. And also, and Parallels Desktop 3 for the Mac is available immediately for $79.99, or as I think of it, $80. I'm sorry, I don't get for that. Our next caller is Mike from Penfield, New York. Welcome, Mike. What's your question?
Well, I'm a computer novice, and my daughter sent me my grandson's HP laptop, and unfortunately, he can't remember his password. Now, can any of those computer repair places do something, and how much would it cost?
It depends. I love those ones.
Yeah. What they should have done before selling it is erase the computer and restore it to the factory specs, and then let you put your own password
in it.
Now,
is it a boot-up password? In other words, can you get to Windows?
Yeah, I get to Windows, and it gives my grandson's name, and then it asks for the password, and there I'm stuck.
And he doesn't know what password he typed in every time to use the computer?
Well, he upgraded. He switched to a table mount and years ago, and he supposedly can't remember what the hell it was.
Yeah, we could get something like that off. You're probably looking at maybe an hour and a half in labor.
You may want to bring proof of purchase. We've had people try to scam us like that. I just bought this computer on eBay, and it's got the other guy's password on it. Can you change it for me?
Yeah.
Show me your proof of purchase that you really bought it.
Well, I can't. I'm a trainer.
Bring your grandson with you?
He's from Texas.
Yeah. We could probably get it off there for you.
Who can you recommend? Yeah, can you reckon anybody or no?
Yeah, myself, Enright PC. I'm Dave Enright. We're at 70 Empire Boulevard. Our phone number is 442-4843.
Oh, on Empire Boulevard?
Yes, sir.
442, what is it again?
Pardon?
442-4843.
Monday through Friday, 9 to 5.
And whereabouts in Empire are you?
We're half a mile up from Dan's Crest. We're kitty corner from St. Ambrose Church.
And between,
okay.
Between right Culver here. And 590.
Yep.
Okay, very good. I'll give you a call.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Have
Bye.
A good day.
Thank you. Our next caller is Dave from SOTUS, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
I had a beautiful webcam picture of the home repair clinic, and I had great streaming. At 11 o'clock, when I wanted to get you guys, I lost the stream, and I can't get it back. It goes to connecting, and then it flashes several times and then goes to ready.
Yeah, that's what mine's doing,
yeah,
too.
They've got a...
I'm on.
You're on?
Yeah, well, that's interesting, because that computer's outside the WAM network. I figured Dave's would work, because he's inside the WAM network. Yeah, what happened is they have a link on their website that they take down because the camera stops at 11.
Right.
But the camera is still working, so if you have that direct link to the media file, it should still play.
It's not playing. It's going connect to media, connect
well,
to
they're
media,
working on resolving right. it. We're,
yeah.
we're working on getting that resolved.
And yes. when we get the right link, we'll set it up. We'll put it in our links section.
That's great. I don't know if you guys are influential about the camera or not, but maybe it could be relocated or tilted or something so we can see everybody.
Yeah. Well, there's only three of us, and we're all there now. I know that when they do the home repair clinic, Doug sits on the other side of the table, and he's behind. He can't be seen by the camera.
And
that's just really a matter of relocating Doug. That's all that has to be done.
Well, we also get a nice shot of the back of Glenn's head on that camera.
Yeah, right.
But the schedule says that it's only available Sunday 9 to 11.
Yes, I've asked them to extend that, and the station manager assured me he had done so, but it apparently didn't trickle down to the guy who actually has to set it up at their web guy.
Well, we'll be looking forward to all that getting adjusted so that we can get in and see you guys and listen to the program.
Right. Excellent.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Great day.
Man, that camera is way behind. All right, we're going to take another break. But again, we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour, and you are listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Everybody, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbite. Those of you who are using BitTorrent or any of the torrent versions to download things, well, you've got a problem. A court decision reached last Monday, but under seal until Friday, could force websites to track visitors if the sites become defendants in a lawsuit. TorrentSpy, a popular BitTorrent search engine, was ordered on May 29th by a federal judge in California to create logs detailing user activities on the site. The judge, Jacqueline Chulian, however, granted a stay of the order on Friday to allow TorrentSpy to file an appeal. The appeal must be filed by June 12th. TorrentSpy has promised in its privacy policy never to track visitors without their consent. It is likely that TorrentSpy would turn off access to the U.S. before tracking its users. Their attorney said, if this order were allowed to stand, it would mean that websites can be required by discovery judges to track what their users do, even if their privacy policy says otherwise. The Motion Picture Association of America, which represents Columbia Pictures and other top Hollywood film studios, sued TorrentSpy and a host of others in February 2006 as part of a sweep against file sharing companies. According to the MPAA, the search engine was sued for allegedly making it easier to download pirated files. Representatives of the trade group could not be reached for comment. So basically what they're attempting to do is make TorrentSpy keep track of everybody in case they ever need to sue somebody. Well, that's kind of nice. For them. All right, our next caller is Jenny from Leroy. Welcome, Jenny. What's your question?
Hi.
My question is related to the thunderstorm that we just had.
Yes.
We're on dial-up. We're probably the last people in the world in Western New York here on dial-up.
Yeah.
We are on dial-up.
And my father-in-law lives in Leroy. He's on dial-up, too.
Storm hit. My husband turned the surge protector off, which seems like that turns off your protection.
Well, the surge protection only protects against surges on the electrical. Surges are an extremely small percentage of the problem.
Okay.
Brownouts, spikes, dropouts are much more common.
Okay.
And secondly, the surge protector typically doesn't protect your telephone line, which is how most of the surges get in.
Right. Unless that's coming out of the wall into a surge protector, out of the surge protector into your computer, then your modem isn't protected.
Well, that's where it is. It's actually into the surge protector.
Okay.
Yeah, turning off the surge protector does not change the protection on the modem.
Okay. Well, my issue then is since Saturday, we get an error message both with Safari and with our Internet Explorer. We are running a Mac.
Mm-hmm.
That we can't open the page because it can't find the server. My son can use his AIM account, LimeWire, or iChat, but we can't get on to Safari or Internet Explorer.
So the Internet is dialing okay.
Right. It's dialing, and it's sitting there, you know, looking
well,
at us.
Internet Explorer was abandoned about 7 years ago by Microsoft, and it's not unusual that websites aren't working.
Yeah.
Just had a problem yesterday. Google doesn't work anymore with IE5, and Microsoft has never released a newer version of that. So you should stop trying to use Internet Explorer.
Yeah, we don't usually try it. It was just like, well, give that a try. See if Safari's dead.
Safari maybe. Or Firefox are the better browsers. In Safari, there's an empty cache command.
I did that.
And a reset Safari command.
I did that, too.
And they often will fix problems like this.
I did both. I did the reset and I did the empty. And I still get... Nothing.
What server are you trying to access when it gives you the server not found error?
It's all of them, any of them. We can go to try to get an MSN. We can go to, right now it's trying to get the live page Apple one, but it can't do that one.
That doesn't exist anymore.
Can't do Hotmail.
They canceled the live page 4 or 5 years ago as well.
Yeah, well, that's what this just automatically tries to go to. But then we always just switch to Hotmail or MSN or something. So we just can't get anything. We can't get any of our servers.
Was this machine on during the lightning storm?
I don't really know. I wasn't home. Probably physically on. I don't know if somebody was here. I mean, if somebody was actually...
Well, what I'm wondering is if in fact, Safari itself was damaged. But it would be... odd to just damage the two programs that do web browsing.
Right.
Do you have a router?
No.
So you just... right, of course, because you
just have an internal modem in
yeah.
the computer. It
right.
plugs into the wall, and that's it. It's an EMAC. It's not a very sophisticated thing.
This is twice in the same show. Somebody's going to have to look at this. This is...
that's what I figured.
This is one of those things that I'm afraid somebody's just going to have to look at.
But he can launch AIM, and AIM works okay, and he can chat with people?
Yeah.
So that implies that the internet is working.
Yeah.
Right.
Clearly it is.
Yeah.
Right.
Have you tried downloading?
Well, if you can't.
I can't.
Right, you can't.
We're going to actually go, I can access, we have a laptop, we're going to go down to the local McDonald's who has wireless and, see what we can do there and pull things off and change it over, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say try downloading Firefox as another browser.
Actually, she's got that on her computer, but for IBM, so I have to download
the Mac. And that all works.
Now,
okay.
Another trick for fixing Firefox for Safari problems is in your home folder, if you go to library, there's a Safari folder there.
Okay.
Drag that out of the library, put it on your desktop, and see if Safari then works.
Okay.
That folder contains your... let me make sure. That's the folder for your bookmarks and your preferences, so that don't delete it yet, because if Safari does start working, then you can import your bookmarks from that old bookmarks folder. So it could be a file inside of that preference library is corrupted. So that's something to try too.
Okay. Okay. All right.
All right. Good luck, Jenny.
Thanks.
We're gonna take a quick what? What, Jenny?
Jenny's gone. We lost her.
My
just
fault.
In case.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 50 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 52 minutes after the hour, it's Soundbites. All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Get on your footy jammies, grab your cup of hot cocoa and your teddy bear, gather in a semicircle around the rocking chair if we can slap them awake. It's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave?
Oh.
Welcome, Uncle Dave. It's time for Story Hour.
It's rough getting back from vacation.
It stinks, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, you just get into the swing of things, and it's like, but I'm here.
Good.
And we did have one issue while I was gone. I mean, thank God for the folks back at my shop. I mean, they just keep...
Dan did a great job here last week. A truly great job.
He's my partner, and
he stayed awake through the whole thing.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
I have to talk to him. But anyways, one thing, folks have to get through their heads. And I apologize. I admit, you know, we try to do our best, but not always can we. And what I'm referring to is folks are getting a lot of these machines that are preloaded with a lot of stuff. And, you know, for some reason, if something crashes or breaks, you know, they bring it in us and we have to reload. Well, we reload with what you provide us with. And if you provide us with, nothing, or just the original restore CD, and all it puts back is Windows XP, but I had Windows Word on there, and I had this and that. Well, unless you provide me with those products to put back on, I can't do it. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
Well, I don't have those discs anymore. Well, then I'm not going to steal it for you again.
Right. Exactly. Make sure when you do bring those discs in, they're original discs. Do not ask someone else to be a partner in crime for you. Even if you legitimately own them, how are we supposed to know that?
Yeah, well don't you have that laying around? No, you know, it's just like keyboards or anything else for laptops. Don't you have that in stock? You know how many different keyboards I'd have to have in stock to try to replace in all the different laptops?
Also, Microsoft Word costs money.
Yeah.
So if you were to say to somebody, don't you just have one of those lying around? It's like saying to somebody, well, haven't you just got a motherboard lying around? Can you just put that in there for me?
No.
I mean, it costs you money, but now it won't cost me money. I win.
Right. But these folks that, you know, we try to do our best, but that's why you got something cheap or got it at a great bargain. The big thing right now is, Dell is now selling their computers at Walmart.
Yeah.
You know, get the blue light special. Well, yeah, it's a blue light special.
And no, that's Kmart.
Or is it
the blue light special is Kmart.
Whatever. They're all, you know,
another one of our fine local retailers.
Yeah.
But they're all still places that these folks are going to get deals and these bargains.
There's a reason it's a bargain.
Yeah, right. And then when something happens and you need it fixed and I ask you, where's the disc or any place? And this is not just me. It's going to be any place in the city that's honest. You ask them. You ask the client, well, where's your restore disc? I don't know. I didn't have it. It didn't come with it. Can't you put it back on? No.
Many times we can call the company and order new discs, and they're about $50.
Yeah.
And you'll pay not only for that, but the time that it takes.
The time and effort. So I got, you know, probably the first step here is save your discs. Remember where you put your discs. Keep them with the computer. Keep them handy.
And a lot of them, hello, folks, it tells you, when you get a new system, especially laptops, there's usually a program to make backup CDs.
Yeah, now it is true that DVDs. A lot of computers aren't coming with restore disks anymore. You're supposed to make them yourself.
Take the time and do it.
And the problem is, if it's a restore disk, it will restore it to the way it was when you got it. No additional software, all your files gone, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things you can do to make your life so much easier when you have a problem with your computer, do regular backups.
Yes. You constantly have to. And that's where, in fact, I'll do it up sometime when I have some time. When we're saying do the backups, there's a, within Windows XP, you can do the file and transfer settings. you can run that backup program, create that file saying that this is the old computer, and then you take that folder and burn that to a CD or a DVD, whichever it'll fit on. That way you have at least the current picture of your desktop, your emails, and your documents all rolled into one bundle. It will not put back the programs, but all those files and emails and every bookmarks and all that, it will save those settings. It's just the other stuff, you know, it cannot reinstall for you, like Word, Excel, and Pro. You got to buy those, like Nick said. You know, they're not cheap, and yeah, you might have gotten them because they were doing it with a special.
You might have got a demo bundled, and it's, you know, 60-day demo that times out. Or maybe they did bundle it and didn't include the discs. You're out of luck.
I had a client a while back do that, too. They got into the demo, and they wanted us to install some stuff. By the time they got it back, Word had expired. And I says, well, you put it on the demo. Well, can't you reset the time? I didn't have it for a week. I want to use it. Well, then buy it.
Yeah.
Or what I wanted.
Or buy something better or cheaper.
Yeah. I wound
download OpenOffice.
Yeah. No, that's how I became the hero.
Yeah.
Literally. I said, well, if you want to save a few $100s, what do I got to do? I said, just go to OpenOffice and download that for free. They love it.
Mm-hmm. It's a great product.
They love it.
One good thing in Microsoft's favor. Now, everyone write this down. The standard price of Microsoft Office is $400, which is terrible. They have a student and teacher version. You get three licenses for $150. That's $50 for each of your computers.
Yep.
That's fairly reasonable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is. If you can qualify for the student discount.
Yeah.
Right.
We got to take a break. The mighty Glenn Lambert, his mellifluous tones will be wafting into your ears in just a minute. He'll be bringing you the news, the sports, the weather, all the important things you really listen to Wham for. And then on the other side of that, we will be back with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with Pat Kay, with me, Nick Francesco, and all of you. So if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back bringing you all this good stuff in just a couple of minutes on Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Pat Kirchgesser.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. You are listening to Soundbites. Before we get back to the phones, every week we do a poll on our website. That's soundbites.org. Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Last week's poll I've now lost it completely. Here it is. Was about the Google toolbar. Under Firefox, and 306 of you voted, making it number 150 on the all-time hit list, thanks to each and every one of you. The question was, do you use the Google toolbar for Firefox? Choices were yes, no, and Google who for fire what now? Overwhelmingly, 77% of you said no, 22% of you said yes, and a mere 26 of you had no idea what we were talking about, or just didn't care enough. This week's poll is about... an interesting news item. Computer Associates has patched two flaws in its antivirus engine that would have allowed hackers to remotely compromise a vulnerable system. The first flaw centers on a boundary error in Vetti.dll files that occurs when processing cab archives, especially crafted cab archive, with overly long file names can trigger a stack-based buffer overflow. In both cases, it means that somebody can get into your machine, take it over, and do whatever they want. Computer Associates has issued an update, and you should download that and install it, which begs the question, are you using the Computer Associates software? And that's what our question is. I use Computer Associates' antivirus product. And this is a gentle reminder, since both of our major broadband providers here in town, Time Warner and Frontier, both provide Computer Associate software as a free download for you. So if you are using those, you need to update. So the question is, I use Computer Associates antivirus products. And the choices are yes from Frontier, yes from Time Warner, yes from somewhere else, no, and no idea. Currently, we have 85 votes, and 84% of you said no, and so on. When you are done voting, however, you will be able to... I know that voting by itself is not enough for you folks, because clicking one little button just doesn't do it for you. You need to talk. So when you're done voting, you'll see a yellow box underneath the poll. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it takes you to my website, AskNick.com. That's AskNick.com. And you will be able to enter an opinion. And as long as you are at AskNick.com, check out the forums. I do a newsletter, and all kinds of good stuff goes on my site. You can search for old newsletter answers to solve your problems, and it's a mere $15 a year. I don't imagine why not everybody on earth does it. It's just clearly a wonderful thing. All right, we're back to the phones, and our next caller is Rick from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question?
Hey, good afternoon.
Good, how are you?
I have two problems, and I think I know what one of them is.
Okay, first, thanks for calling. Bye-bye. Oh, no, go ahead.
I'm supposed to say that to you because I've been on for 45 minutes.
Yeah, but you have.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It's a Hewlett-Packard... laptop. It's running on XP 2000 Home Edition. Every time I hit the G, the H, or the apostrophe key, they just keep on repeating themselves. I think that might be a keyboard problem.
Yeah.
Could be crumbs or something stuck underneath, too.
Yeah, I tried blowing it out. I probably have to get some compressed air in there.
Now, you say this is a laptop?
Yep, it's a laptop.
Yeah.
Those are rough.
Be very careful what you use. And
okay.
Be very careful how you do it, because make sure it's turned off, because a lot of the compressed air, when they blast out, they condense because they're so cold,
right.
And you get moisture in the keyboard.
That makes
so
sense.
After you blast it out, let it dry for a few hours.
And okay. Take the laptop and set it, you know, so it forms like a V, and set it up so it's up and down.
Right. Okay.
With the keyboard and the screen facing in the V.
Yeah.
You know, so
right.
Yeah, set it up like a tent.
So you can sit there and then hold it and kind of blow it so it falls downward.
Okay.
Right. There's no point in blowing out the crumbs into another key.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because some folks will lay it flat and then you're just moving it from one key on up, usually on up to the numbers. And then the numbers don't work.
Right. So definitely, I think you're on the right track. It's clear that there's something going on, and it probably is crumbs.
Yeah, because I installed an external keyboard, and it's fine. Doesn't
yep,
do it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So it's probably crumbs or something else in there. So if you tent it and blow it out, you should be fine.
Okay. My second problem is it boots real slow. Now, I'm pretty illiterate on computers, but I have a 60 gig hard drive, and I think I found out what my spec was for RAM, and it's only 192 megabytes. I don't know if that's a good ratio.
You need 1,000 megabytes minimum.
Yeah,
these days to run efficiently.
Likes, there's we no start ratio. At 512.
Right.
Yeah, 512 minimum. And a gig 1,000 is better.
Why
yeah.
wouldn't they put that in it when they made it?
Because it's cheaper if they don't.
Yeah, that's why you got a deal on it.
Yeah.
Can more RAM be installed on a laptop?
Depends. You'd have to check the underside of it, see how much was installed, how many slots there are available, and how much memory it will accept.
And you can either do that yourself or bring it to one of our reputable dealers, such as Dave's or Steve's.
Is it a name brand laptop or an off brand?
HP.
It's HP.
Yeah. Yeah, you can go to HP's website and they should tell you how much RAM it can take.
Oh, that's just it. I got a this.
There is no relationship between the amount of hard disk space you have and the amount of RAM you have on a desktop on a server. Absolutely, but because of caching of database files, but. On a regular laptop, that's not the problem. The problem is at 192 meg, Windows is way crowded and therefore runs a lot slower than it should.
And if you got any programs...
It boots incredibly slow.
Yeah, I bet.
Need some cleaning up and more memory.
Okay, and is there something more RAM I could do myself? Or
generally speaking, yes. It depends entirely on the configuration of your particular laptop.
Okay.
You know, sometimes it's a door on the bottom that's easy to get to. Sometimes you have to pull the keyboard off, and that's a little harder.
Yeah. It's a lot harder. Yeah.
No, it
well, no, pulling the keyboard off is actually pretty easy.
Yeah, going to get back on and working. Is
that... I've done that before with clocks, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What was I going to say?
I don't know.
It's got a DVD. I'm sorry. It's got a CD burner in it. Can I do backups on that?
Absolutely.
As long as it's a burner.
Yeah. It's a burner. CD burner. But what I don't understand is when I got... I have all the discs that I had that I got with it. And there is one disc in the envelope I haven't even opened that said some kind of DVD win something. So I don't know if it has the capability of being a DVD burner.
It may be what's called a combo drive, a CD burner and a DVD player.
Yeah.
So you can watch DVD movies on it. And the Win DVD player is what a software you would use to watch
movies. I can watch movies on it.
You're looking for a product called Nero or Roxio.
Yeah, you need CD burning software, and that should have been included also. Dragon, Roxio, Nero,
Easy
something
Creator.
Like that.
Yeah.
Oh, so again, it does have the capabilities of being a DVD burner.
No. It's a CD burner DVD player.
Probably.
Okay.
Unless it says DVD minus R on it. Or DVD minus RW on the drive. It won't burn DVDs.
It'll just play them.
It'll just play them. Well, it does play them, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, there you go.
Thank you very much, guys.
Our pleasure. Enjoy. Well, this is a guy who knew where he was going with all of that. Our next caller is Harry from Pittsburgh, New York. Welcome, Harry. What's your question?
Hi, guys. It's Barry.
Barry, excuse me.
That's good. That's okay. I have an iTunes question. I have a lot of music on my machine. It's a Windows machine. And when I say a lot, I've got 10,000 songs because I used to be a DJ, and I took all my CDs and just put them over into MP3s.
Yep.
Now, in the last year, I've started to buy a lot more music from iTunes for that 99-cent deal.
Yep.
Probably 250 or 300. They're mixed. How can I get iTunes to search? Because what I want to do is I want to go back and unprotect them so it's much easier to manage and pay 30 cents each for each one. How can I get iTunes to search for the ones that I purchased through iTunes?
There should automatically be a smart playlist on the left called Purchased Music.
Yeah, but that's already gone because in addition, I moved them from drive to drive and around because I had a hard drive failure.
Yeah.
So I have them, but that purchased list that used to just show me all of them, I have to have it be able to re-recognize that.
It should do that automatically. You may have to log back into your iTunes account for that purchased music list to show up. And then when you log into the iTunes Plus service, which is where you get the unprotected DRM-free.
And that's what I'm going to do.
Right, that gives you the option to repurchase all of those original songs in the unprotected format for the 30 cents additional.
So do you think my iTunes account then would remember all those I bought?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it is supposed to do that. That's part of the service you get from iTunes.
Yeah, and from inside of iTunes, you can do a smart playlist or a find, and you can find protected AAC.
Oh, now tell me exactly how to do that, and I'm recording this, so that's what I want. How do I find those?
With the find command, or the smart playlist command, which will create a new smart playlist. And under kind, you want to be protected AAC, or just protected.
Okay.
And then anytime you have a protected AAC file, it will show up in that smart playlist.
And good. That's what I want.
That's what you got.
And the iTunes Store.
That works.
Yep. The iTunes Store will also track that for you to show you what you've purchased. And there's also a check for purchased music command that will see if you said you had a hard drive failure, if you've lost some of your purchased songs, it will let you re-download your recently purchased songs that you're missing.
Yeah, I have not lost anything because I do back up all the time. So I have everything. I'm just trying to sort it out of the 10,000 files.
Yeah. That'll do it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much, guys.
Have fun. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you at 18 minutes after the hour It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat Kay.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, you're listening to Soundbites.
Let me make a quick amendment. The find command in iTunes does not search on the kind of field. You either have to...
So we lied to Barry.
Well, correcting. The smart playlist does work. Kind is one of the features you can search on. Or you can turn on the kind field in the display and then sort by kind. And all your protected files will be listed together.
All right. Those of you who are using Yahoo's Instant Messenger, you need to update. Yahoo Inc. late on Thursday released a new version of its Messenger instant messaging client to patch a pair of zero-day vulnerabilities that lets attackers grab control of a Windows PC with little or no help from the user. The bugs in Messenger's webcam ActiveX controls were reported Wednesday by EI Digital Security Inc. Within hours, a researcher identified only as Danny has posted exploit code for both flaws on a security mailing list. But we know her as Betty. A day later, Yahoo had patched Messenger, posted the new version on its site, and urged everyone to download and install it. The update isn't mandatory, however. The reality is, if you would choose not to update, you will still be vulnerable. They should make it mandatory, but they did not. It is not an automatic update, which means that if you have an older version of Yahoo Instant Messenger, you might have some trouble. So definitely update to the latest version if you're a Yahoo Messenger user. Now, clearly, if you're not a Yahoo Messenger user, you do not have to update.
Good reason to not to.
Good reason not to be one. I'm still using Game and I love it. Nice product. They're not calling it that anymore. They call it Pigeon now.
Pigeon?
P-I-D-G-I-N, because the AIM people didn't like the word AIM in the middle of the name Game.
And there's also
the name Game. Banana Banana. Sorry.
There's also a spyware company called Game. The Gator products.
That Game?
Yeah, that claimed to. They do. They let you play little games and stuff, but they're mostly spyware, so you don't want to run anything Gator.
Yeah,
you
know, right.
Or the Game
Ever.
Network.
Yeah. Ever. All right, our next caller is Rick from Batavia, New York. Welcome, Rick. What's your question? Hi, Rick.
Rich.
Yes. Yeah, Rich.
Yes, I've just bought a brand new computer, and it has Vista on it. And my old computer, I handed down to my kids, which of course had the Windows XP, and I was using Internet Explorer 6 with Outlook Express. Mm-hmm. And the new computer came with Internet Explorer 7.
Yep.
And there's no way of that I could find of putting Outlook Express on here because it uses. What is it, Windows Mail?
Yeah. Windows Mail is just a different name for Outlook
Express. Outlook Express, yeah.
And, of course, it looks different because it's Vista. Vista has changed the way everything looks. It is still essentially the same program.
They just moved it around to different places.
Right.
But the old Outlook Express used to allow me to have multiple accounts on there, and I could switch back and forth from my wife to me to my kids. The new one won't allow me to do that.
You're supposed to have multiple user accounts under Windows, and each user gets their own private email space.
So they got to log on and log off of each person has to have their own screen. In other words, you got if you want to, you just can't just click on switch users and check your wife's email. You've got to literally log off of Windows Vista. Log on as her, then go over to the mail program and go in there and check it.
Or use a different mail program that supports multiple identities in the same account.
Like Thunderbird.
Thunderbird.
Right, in which I, of course, went to instead of the Internet Explorer 7.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I use Firefox and Thunderbird now, but that was my main question.
Right, but Microsoft Mail won't let you, but Thunderbird will.
Yep.
Yes, and I've already set that up, and I just, you know, I'd like the Outlook Express and everything, but it just wouldn't allow me to do it.
Yeah, and actually you're better moving off from it anyway, because Outlook Express is used by so many people that it is one of the big targets for virus writers.
Ah, okay. And also, now I have my new computer and I have a router. I can't get the two to communicate. I set up a local like
you
network.
Mean between XP and Vista?
Yeah,
that's the security features for you.
Yep.
You have to have to disable security on what's the port? What's the file sharing port under Windows?
22?
No. It's 548 on the Mac. 139.
139?
Yeah, port 139 is the Microsoft file sharing port. So you have to open that port.
Is that both for Vista and the XP?
Yes. It's the SMB client. So you have to open that port in the built-in firewall to allow file sharing to transfer between the computers.
Oh, wow. Okay.
See, it's like every nice thing that Microsoft did, there's a huge gotcha behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because I set up everything as the, you know, the network name is all the same, the different users, and it still won't.
Right, it's that security feature.
It's port 445 and port 139.
Now, where do I go to
SMB? Oh, it's under what? Where's we don't know anymore. Where's the Windows firewall under Vista? Anyone remember?
No,
anyone know
the
yet?
Problem is it's so new we don't have it memorized yet. But it's in the firewall, which you probably get to through the control panel.
Gotcha, okay.
And maybe security or something
security
like that.
Security or internet.
It's buried. I mean, like I said, that's the biggest thing that's upsetting folks about
Vista. We haven't
Vista.
Memorized these things
yet.
Yeah,
Vista is, it's so different in that they rearranged things and put things in totally different places that they didn't have to because everybody knew where they were under XP, but just to be different, they moved it or split it out and made it more complex.
Now, I noticed also on Vista, every time you go to open a program, it asks you permission. And it seems to me like it's similar to like the Zone Alarm program.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But with Zone Alarm, you could tell it to always allow that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't give you that same question over and over and over again. Is there any way to do that with the Vista to tell it never to ask me that question again?
Nope.
Yes, there is. I mean, you can do that, in the security settings in the control panel. But what you really want to do is tell it, remember this. You want it to ask you the first time.
Right. It doesn't give you that feature to remember this.
I think that's in the control panel.
I didn't see it.
Really?
Yeah, but it should be in that box. Remember for this application. And it's not.
Nope.
My first Vista experience, I was trying to rename a folder, and I had to okay 16 times. Are you sure you want to do this? Yes. Do you have permission to do this? Yes. What's the administrator? I am the administrator. I just want to rename a folder.
Yeah.
So,
These are the growing pains of a new operating system.
Yeah.
And this is why so many Mac and Linux users are happy. Because a lot of people try Vista and then immediately go out and either buy a Mac or Linux and install that. All right. Thank you very much, Rich.
Thank you.
Our next caller is Bob from Rush, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's your question?
Oh, hi. Boy, I sure enjoyed listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Now it's great to talk to you. I have it's more of a curiosity question than a problem question. Okay, when I'm running Windows XP Home Edition.
Yeah.
And when I shut down, I get a window. I've never noticed it before because I always shut down and walk away. This time I was watching the screen. I get ending program, and it's a real crazy program name. It's lowercase e, 6, capital Q, 4, capital K, D, capitals T-E-B-R, 4, capital K, 3, capital P-A, and then dot, dot, dot. And I feel the dot, dot, dots are probably because they can't fit the rest of the sequence. And then it says, please wait. Goes about 10 seconds, and then it shuts down and goes away. I can't find that program name anywhere.
Yeah, I bet you couldn't. That sounds to me like a virus.
Yeah.
Is that right?
What antivirus program are you running?
Virus
I'm
or Trojan?
I'm actually using McAfee under the AOL, the AOL free virus stuff that you get.
Right. Let me suggest this. Okay. Well, it could be, I suppose, part of something, but let me suggest that you dance the security tango.
Yeah, I do. I do every weekend.
You do?
Yep. And I've got two computers. This happens on both computers, and they're pretty closely matched. I mean, they're both XP Home Edition, and I run the security tango on both every weekend. So it's crazy.
Well,
it,
then
it doesn't
if you
seem to be hurting anything.
Well, if you're sure that everything is updated,
yes, yeah,
and that you're running the latest antiviruses definitions and all of that stuff.
AOL updates me every evening.
One thing you can try before you shut down, hit Control Alt Delete, bring up the task manager.
Okay.
And then there's an all tasks. By default, it just shows you your user tasks.
Right.
There's an all or a system or something like that.
Right.
You may find that task listed there.
It's
the name of the task, not necessarily the name of the file.
Right, right. I've done that, and I don't see that listed. That's what's so strange about it. I can't find it anywhere. You know, I go to MSConfig, okay, display all the startup programs. It's not in there. And, you know, it's not in that screen that you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's even more leaning toward a virus or a Trojan because it's hiding its program name.
Yeah, right. But
you
it's not hurting it.
You could try searching. Well, it's not that you know of.
Not that I know of.
You could try searching the registry and finding it in there, but that's dangerous, and I wouldn't recommend doing anything after it finds
right.
it.
Right. If you go and find it, you'll know what folder it came from, theoretically, and that might be useful.
Okay, I can try that.
But don't change anything there.
Oh, I won't.
Call us back and let us know.
No. Okay, fine. Yes, I will. Thank you.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Is one of bye-bye. This is one of the problems that we generally have with any of these things. There are so many things going on in the background in Windows that nobody knows about, that Microsoft hasn't made public. I mean, when I run Linux, if I look through my list of running programs and I find something I don't know, I'll guarantee you there are 2,000 places I can go on the web to look it up and find out what it is.
And there's so many Trojans out there right now, you might not see it down in the taskbar down in the lower right-hand corner.
Right.
A lot of it can be keyboard strokers or whatever. These folks can get Trojans in there that they sneak. Like we've said before, you can download a program and think, oh, I had a bad download. No, you downloaded a Trojan. And it wound up doing what it's supposed to do and slow down your machine and report other things that are going on within your machine or use your machine for a hopping point for gathering information, collecting it, and then sending it on to another place.
Right.
So, I mean, it's very careful. You got to be careful out there, where you're going and what you're doing and kind of watch it because if things do start to slow down, 10-to-1 odds, there are some... I'm seeing more Trojans and spyware than actual viruses out there anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's a bigger market. The folks that used to write a lot of viruses and we kept saying, well, why did they do it? Well, it was just fun for them. But now they're finding that if they do the Trojans and the spyware, they can get information or fake folks into thinking that, oh, this is a legitimate thing from their bank, and they gather information from folks, which then they're stealing identity. Now, there's money in that, whereas the viruses didn't get them any money. Stealing identities and everything else, is very lucrative right now. I mean, 60 Minutes, I think it was 60 Minutes, or 2020, no, it was 2020, had about stealing
for
identity.
20 Minutes. Sorry, go ahead.
had a special going on about stealing identities, and they literally put out three or four credit cards that only had a $1,000 limit. Within, I think it took one of them a maximum of, I think it was like 37 minutes to max it out, because these underground areas offered the credit cards for sale.
And they usually sell the card for a couple of bucks a piece because they can steal thousands of them so easily.
And they maxed out these cards. Like I say, one of them was maxed out for $1,000 in less than 37 minutes.
Yep.
And they found folks all over the U.S. that were being used. And there was a guy in Rome, New York. They interviewed him and wound up using his because he got conned into accepting stolen stuff because what they were doing was buying the stuff here in the U.S., and they'd con these folks here in the U.S. to accept it and then remail it out to places in, like, South Africa
right.
or other places. And it's a very lucrative business. iPods and everything else were being stolen left and right.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. If you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? Give us a call. We'll be back in just a few minutes. It's 37 minutes after the hour on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. After the hour, you're listening to Soundbites. I love the way Pat throws it back to us. You know, usually you get this little finger thing or a little nod thing. We get this whole grand hand gesture from Pat, and I love that. It's excellent.
I do my best, man.
Here you are. Here you are, my friend. You're next. Please step right up. It's a very elegant gesture. I like it a lot.
You can use more than just one finger, though.
Yeah. No, if the webcam in there were working, of course they turn it off at 11. But if the webcam in there were working, you would see he does this lovely "after you, sir" gesture. Or "you're next, sir" gesture. It's very nice. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's your question?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm great. I got a question for you. Back a couple months, I don't know, about Easter time, I had to do a system recovery on my HP. And I did it. Everything went well. And fixed whatever problem I was having. And I noticed that not everything was back to the way it was in the beginning. It left a lot of programs intact. And some were able to be used still. And others were, they were broken and they couldn't be used anymore. Mm-hmm. You know what causes that?
Yes. When you did a system recovery from the original system disk?
I did it off of the partition. I had system disks made, but I did the partition first.
Now, there's two ways, well, many ways, but there's two major ways that recovery can work. One is it just overwrites what's already there, and the other is that erases what's there and restores it from scratch.
Okay.
And it sounds like you did the first part where it overwrote what was there with new stuff, but left the old stuff there, too.
Okay. Yeah, there was no other. I only saw one option to do it. It didn't give me.
It usually defaults to erase when you do a restore.
It didn't give me an option to do that.
Well, there's a subtle difference between restore and recovery, depending on how the company's defined them.
Okay. Right.
But the thing is, what's happened is the same sort of thing we talked about earlier. It's restored your system to the way it was when you bought it.
Right.
Which means that the programs that were there when you bought it are there. And more importantly, the registry is the way it was when you bought it.
Correct.
So the registry no longer knows about those other programs.
Because I had a bunch of, labeling software and everything, and it was all there, and it still worked, and this was all stuff I installed way after I bought it.
Right. Some things don't really require the registry.
Okay.
And so they would not have been affected.
Okay.
But other programs that do require the registry are affected, and therefore they would have a problem.
So there should be two ways to recover, one that just restores, and one that actually overwrites the system?
Yep. Well, it depends on how the manufacturer created it.
Okay.
Usually, it's just erase.
Okay.
Some of them give you both options. Some of them are just erase.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Thank you for the information.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
It's oftentimes too easy to click erase. It doesn't warn you enough times.
Yeah, right. I forgot to read the news item. I'll do that now. Disney! The Walt Disney Company will triple the amount of money it's spending developing video games to benefit from strong growth prospects in the global market. We are ramping up our investment in video games. It is a market where there is real opportunity, Disney's CFO Tom Staggs told journalists. Part of the entertainment company strategy centers on making sure hit products sell strongly across the business, irrespective, if that's a word, of whether they start as a film, a product, or a game. Disney spent around $100 million on gaming development last year and will spend $130 million this year. Over the next 5 years or so, we are ramping up to about a pace of $350 million per year in video game investment, principally consoles and handhelds, Stagg said. Market researcher Screen Digest forecasts the particularly cyclical global gaming software market will be worth $21.3 billion in 2009. That's billion with a B, compared with only $20.2 billion last year. However, a particularly fast-growing area is the so-called massively multiplayer online gaming systems, MMOGs, which is expected to see subscription revenues jump from $875 million last year to $1.4 billion in 2009. The potential to make profits in that space if you have a hit game is significant. Disney is creating a Pirates of the Caribbean game, or Caribbean if you prefer, to coincide with the release of the latest film, which became a hit across gaming platforms in the UK, France, and Germany. Later this year, Disney plans to launch an MMOG online Pirates game in the U.S., then in the U.K. We are early on in the development of in the process of developing a video gaming capability, Disney said. 3 months ago, Disney launched Spectrobes, a role-playing game for Nintendo's handheld DS player, produced by the company's interactive studios arm that has shipped about 700,000 units. So Disney's getting big into the gaming platform, so we should see much more of that as we go along. Our next caller is Judy from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Judy. What's your question?
My question is, I had my hard drive go, and I had brought it to Enright, and they fixed it, put a new one in. But I have my contacts from Microsoft Outlook in Word, and I want to know if I could transfer it to Outlook. How do I do that?
Outlook has an import command. You probably will have to save the Word file as a text file, something called a comma delimited or tab delimited text file. That's one of the options under Save As.
Okay.
Your contacts all have to be on one line. First name.
Each contact has to be on one line.
First name, comma, last name, comma, address, comma, whatever.
And no spaces.
With no spaces.
Between the commas there.
And then you export that as a text file, and then Outlook should be able to import that.
I export it?
Right, from Word, save as a text file.
Okay.
And that once you've got that first name, comma, last name, comma, whatever, you want to, when you save it, call it whatever name you want to give it, .csv, for comma separated variable.
Comma CSV.
No, .csv. So it's like, my contacts .csv.
Okay.
And then all you have to do then is in Outlook say import, and point it at that file, remember where you saved it, and point it at that file, and it should import it fine. There may be one or two problems. If there are, you can fix those by hand. If there's a lot of problems, you should be able to figure out where you went wrong, recreate that CSV file, wipe out your contacts, and re-import them.
And I'm posting a link on our link list on how to import items into Outlook Express.
There you go.
Okay, thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.
We're going to take another quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 49 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on 1180 WHAM.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Pat.
And it's 53 minutes after the hour. I want to apologize to Pat. I saw the light go on. I didn't look up to see the elegant hand gesture, and I just started talking. My fault entirely. Our next caller is Don from Chi-Li, New York. Welcome, Don. What's your question?
Hi there.
Hi there.
How's everything going?
Good. How's everything going with you?
All right. We got a little slow problem here with this Microsoft Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
We got rid of it, and we put on Firefox, but still, when I start it up, and from a cold start or anything, the Internet Explorer comes on looking for my provider, which is LocalNet, and then they'll say that it cannot find it, and it takes anywhere from 2 to 4 minutes that we're looking, or this thing, we can't do anything until we eliminate it.
Okay, click the start button.
Okay.
Look in your startup folder.
Yes, somewhere in there you've told it or someone told it to automatically open Internet Explorer when you turn the computer on. And you have to find that and tell it to stop.
Depending on what you're running for an operating system, it's either right there, a startup folder, or you have to go into programs to see it.
Okay, it might be programs because that's how we got rid of it in the, it's in Microsoft's programs.
Well, no. You can't get rid of the Internet Explorer program itself.
Okay.
Somewhere in startup, it could be in your startup folder, which is start menu, all programs startup, or it could be in your registry entry, and you have to go into MS config startup items. Somewhere in there, it's being told to open a web page or some sort of web thing, and then Internet Explorer is opening and trying to connect to it.
Okay.
So you have to find that auto startup to stop it from opening that web page when you turn the computer on.
Okay. Well, we'll take a shot at it.
There you go.
Nick, how are you doing on your converting the LPs into CDs? You had a little blurb there about 6 months ago or so.
Yep. I've got, I forget what the name of it is now.
Ion.
I think it is, yeah. So far it works great. I haven't had a lot of time to do it. But so far it works great. I've done a couple of dozen LPs and you just start it up and in they come and it's great.
Cool.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm very impressed. It's a pretty neat little product. It's just a turntable that plugs into my USB port.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, if you already have or still have a turntable on your stereo system, you can plug an out from the stereo to the in on your computer.
Right.
But a lot of people don't have turntables anymore.
That's I do, right. But it's on another floor, yeah. And I don't really have that long a cable. So so I bought this little gizmo. It was whatever. It was $100 at ThinkGeek or Newegg, I think I bought it from.
Yeah, I think we had a link for it.
Yeah, and it works. Yeah, it's in the link list, and it works great. I'm very impressed.
Good. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Don.
Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Our next caller is Marianne from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Marianne. What's your question?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm thinking of purchasing an LCD monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to decide the widescreen or the regular. And I'm wondering if with the widescreen, if it distorts pictures, and if when you, say, bring up a word or something like that.
What operating system are you running?
XP.
You can set it to understand the width of that monitor. In fact, it should do so automatically.
Well, and it's also dependent on your video card. Your video card must have a widescreen setting in it, or it will distort it.
Oh, right. Okay. Also,
so it's in essence in having two monitors side by side in one screen.
Right.
Okay. So the bars would then, if it's not, doesn't recognize it, the bars would be on the side? For a widescreen?
No, what would likely happen is it would stretch the image.
Yeah. Okay.
So a circle would look like an oval.
Yeah. Okay, so now to find out whether the video card supports it, how do I do that?
You'd have to go into the manual for your video card.
Okay, and I don't think I have a manual on
there. Well, you can go online and look for that particular manufacturer.
Talk to the manufacturer of your motherboard. It's probably if the video's on the motherboard, you have to talk to the manufacturer of the motherboard. If it's a separate card, you should either have gotten a thing or you can talk to the manufacturer of your computer and find out.
Okay, so if it supports it, it won't distort the picture then.
Right.
And word would come up normally.
Yeah, not a problem at all. You can put two words side by side.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, the mighty Pat Kay. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in.
Let me do a quick plug here. The Apple Cider Meeting, Wednesday, 7 o'clock at the Visual Studies Workshop downtown.
And I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Please call in earlier and more often next week. We will be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Pat Kay. Might be Rob Linton back next week. I think that's what's happening. I'm Nick Francesco. You're watching Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Thanks so much for listening, and we will see you next week. Same bad time, same bad channel. Here comes the game.